Hello and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online and having technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. And to those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome, and thank you so much for tuning in. This is our 17th episode of On Sacred Ground, broadcasting live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific, on this May 23rd, 2015. And I do have to send out an apology for those of you who were seeking to tune in last week on May 16th, as I was caught up in the merriment and busyness of the Hoodoo Heritage Festival in sunny Forestville, California, hosted by the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. And for those of you who are affiliated with the Lucky Mojo Curio Company or the LMC Radio Network, you receive Lucky Mojo Curio Company's newsletter that comes out every month. You know about the Hoodoo Heritage Festival that we spent many, many months preparing for and finally culminating on last weekend with so many participants coming from all over the country and all over the world to descend on that sunny small town in Northern California to discuss and learn about and be with other practitioners of African-American folk magic. And I have to tell you, it was a blast. It was absolutely one of the most wonderful experiences that I've had in the past couple of years. And as I've been raving to friends and family members, I rave to you as well. Put it on your calendars for next year. Know that sometime next May, there will be the ninth annual Hoodoo Heritage Festival in Forestville, California, and you want to be there. Unfortunately, being caught up in the busyness of it, which included the debut of my new book, Deliverance, Hoodoo Spells of Uncrossing, Healing, and Protection, I was unable to be attentive to last week's broadcast. But we are making up for it with this broadcast because on this episode, we have special guest, spirit worker Langston Kahn, who is joining us to talk about his practice of emotional clearing and his upcoming webinar series on healing our triggers, which you can, as you can imagine, is a subject that's very, very close to my heart. And just for, you know, posterity's sake, I'll say that the guest is also very close to my heart, as he is my fiance. Today is a call-in show, so if you have any questions for our guest or comments on the topic, please call in at 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525, and be sure to dial 1 so that I know that you're in the queue. As we do every week, we're going to be starting today's episode with a portion from the book Earth Prayers from Around the World, 365 prayers, poems, and invocations for honoring the earth. And this prayer is, I believe, from the Aztec peoples, and it reads, "Flowers have come to refresh and delight you, princes. You see them briefly as they dress themselves, spread their petals, perfect only in spring, countless golden flowers. The flowers have come to the skirt of the mountain. Yellow flowers, sweet flowers, precious vanilla flowers, the crow's dark magic flowers weave themselves together. They are your flowers, God. We only borrow them, your flowered drum, your bells, your song. They are your flowers, God." Langston Khan is a spirit worker and empathic healer specializing in emotional clearing. In this age of magical renaissance, he stands firmly at the crossroads, his practice informed by inner relationship focusing, African-American folk magic, British traditional witchcraft, and Western ceremonial magic, with a foundation in the contemporary shamanic cosmology of the Last Mass community, and the guidance of his helping spirits and ancestors. He joyfully endeavors to bring spirituality out of the dark, dusty recesses of esotericism and into our daily existence, where it can aid us in realigning with the ecstatic energy of our soul's purpose and opening our hearts to create real, lasting change in ourselves and in the world. Today, we are so privileged to be joined by Langston Khan. Langston, are you there?
I am. Hello. Thank you for that beautiful prayer.
Wasn't it so beautiful? I mean, I wish I could take credit for it myself, but I'll tell you, these Aztecs had poetry on lock, really. thank you so much for being here. And you also were at the, before we jump into our topic, just because I can't stop, you know, raving and ranting about it, I feel like a madman, you were also at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival in Forestville, California.
Yes, I was, and it was an incredible experience. I mean, I was looking forward to it just because it was going to be my first time visiting Lucky Mojo and meeting lots of great people, but it was just even better than I could have expected. Just so many incredible people, such good conversations, so many good connections, and I felt the seeds of new ideas and inspiration forming inside, new people getting inspired to do new projects. It was a really excellent experience. Just the whole atmosphere of the weekend was so warm and welcoming and just magical, really.
It really is, and it's also so interesting to me that an event that only takes place once a year can have within it the bursting seeds of community. I always tell people, mm-hmm. I say it's like a church picnic, and you don't even know that you've been going to church with these people. It just has that warmth to it that you just don't experience at other festivals and other conferences. There's a warmth and a love and a communalness that I just never experienced anywhere else. And I know that community is something that means a lot to you as well. So, and this was your first time attending.
Yes, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I know that you and I will be going back next year. So tell us a bit about yourself. Tell us a bit about, I'm sure people are hearing, emotional clearing. I know what that means. Do people know what that means? What happens when people ask, hey, Langston, what's emotional clearing? What's this thing that you specialize in?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. It's actually, I've thought before that maybe I need to change the name of this or call something different, but emotional clearing feels so right because that ultimately is what it is. But I oftentimes people might like Google emotional clearing and you'll find like a vast array of different modalities, many of them very focused on sort of centering on positive emotions and using affirmations or centered on maybe body techniques like emotional freedom technique, EFT. But what emotional clearing is, as I understand it and as I practice, it is a body-based energy clearing practice that teaches us to interpret the wisdom of our body. And through that, through learning to listen to the wisdom of our body, really use our lives as our teacher, to notice those things that are triggering us throughout our day, throughout our lives, those old emotional patterns or just patterns in our life we see popping up again and again and again, like, you know, those same that same relationship with communications problems that you keep having again and again in your life, and you realize, you know, the only common denominator here is me. Or addictions as well, those things that just keep us circling and circling around that thing that we really want, but for whatever reason don't feel we can actually have, so we substitute with these addictions that just keep us in these patterns of doing the same thing again and again and again. So I feel like emotional clearing is working with that. Rather than just focusing on the positive, really being with those parts of ourselves that feel stuck or those parts of ourselves that feel triggered and learning how to come into relationship with those parts of ourselves. I think often in our culture we're kind of taught to think of emotions as objects, that we can just put aside and when we're ready to use them. Like, this is inappropriate to be here. Rather than emotions really being, in a lot of ways, our body communicating with us, like sort of the interface between our mind and our spirits and our body, telling us something's off here or something wants to be expressed here. And I think often our so the actual technique itself is a lot about just giving the people tools to come into a real presence with those parts of themselves. And often, as soon as you really are in presence with those parts of yourself, they transform and change. But if they don't, then there's also techniques for working with them to unravel those old stuck belief patterns, to find the root of those emotional patterns and what's generating them, to go back into sort of memories and change the story a bit, to really clear parts of ourselves that were wounded in childhood and that we still are projecting on the present moment.
So I have to ask, how accessible is this practice? I mean, you mentioned body-based, and I know that, you know, a lot of people immediately just shut off the broadcast and closed their computer and ran out of the room. So you know, when you say body-based, what exactly do you mean a body-based body-based experience, and how do we interface on that level? Why the body?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I say body-based because one of the techniques that I'm trained in that is part of the emotional clearing that I do is focusing. It was developed by Eugene Denlin. And he developed this technique after listening to thousands upon thousands of recordings of therapy sessions and finding that the sessions in which patients actually were able to make a real lasting change in their lives, have a real breakthrough, that the patient, you know, recognizes a breakthrough, was when there was some sort of felt sense in the body as part of the session. So it wasn't just like in their head talking, but they actually connected something they were feeling emotionally or mentally to a felt sensation in their body, a felt shift there in their body. And so this practice is centered on helping people to connect their emotions and their thoughts to what's going on in their body, like that pain in your shoulder, learning the tools to sense into that pain in your shoulder and know what that pain is telling you. Like maybe it's just because you slept wrong, but maybe that pain in your shoulder is because there's this big weight you've been carrying around for a while there, and it's causing your posture to change, and it has something to tell you, something to teach you about how you might approach life a little differently by working with it. And oftentimes when we're able to make those, to listen and make those changes, and the pain also goes away. So it's like this sort of back and forth interface between what's going on in our body and what's going on in our mind and emotions. That's why I call it body-based.
And the body sort of being the real barometer here, like the key, sort of the difference between someone saying, oh, I don't know, I'm feeling nervous, and then saying, I'm feeling nervous, I have these butterflies in my stomach. This sort of idea that there's a felt sense in our bodies that's tied to the emotion, and once we tap in to that felt sense in our bodies, then we really have something substantial to be able to work with.
Exactly, yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I realize I didn't really define what felt sense means. It sounds kind of like an esoteric word, but really it's something I feel that we've all experienced at different times in our life. And I think one of the strongest places where people experience a felt sense is in their dreams. Like you might wake up and you had a dream, but you don't remember it. And someone asks you, was it about llamas? And you say, no, because even though you don't remember it. And then they say, was it about dogs? And you say, yes. Yes, there's something about dogs. So maybe more of the dream comes slowly as you sense back into that dream about dogs. But it's like that's the felt sense, that part of ourself that's beyond words, but that has this inner knowing, this inner sense of yes or no in response to something, even when our memory can't quite access that felt sense.
Interesting. So what brought you to this practice? Is this something that you grew up with? Is this something that you learned from a teacher? How did you come to this practice of emotional clearing?
Yeah, well, my first teacher actually was my mother, who practices focusing, interrelationship focusing, which is a little different than the technique that I do, but definitely a foundation of the technique that I do. And what drew me to it wasn't just because she was teaching it, but because I had had this experience in my life for a very long time of just feeling like there was an abyss almost within me between my body and my emotions. Like I had an inability to fully feel my emotions in the moment and then express them. Not that I was like a very expressive person. You know, I have lots of friends. I am someone people would come to for advice a lot. But there was still this sense that there was this disconnect ultimately between my emotions and being able to feel them and express them in real time. And so this is the first technique that I tried, and it started to feel like I was bridging that gap. Like suddenly I was able to access a lot more of the wholeness of myself. And so I decided to keep going with it and seeing what else happened. And it's just been, it was also one of those times when you experience in your life where something you learn, you start to see in every other aspect of your life just because it's so true that it doesn't just, the sort of wisdom you're gaining through the practice is not just about the practice, it's also just about your whole life. And this is one of my first experiences of that in a big way, just seeing like, wow, when I'm really learning to be in presence with my body, it's changing how I'm in presence with everything else in my life.
So you're sort of saying that this isn't just a, you know, I sit with someone for an hour, I learn something about myself, and then, you know, the next week I sit with them for an hour, and then but it's something that, you know, sort of resonates through everything in your life once you start to do it. Now, also, is this something that someone needs someone to help them through, or is this something that once people catch on, they can sort of do it for themselves?
Yeah, I would say it's both. I think people, it's very helpful. I mean, you can learn from books somewhat, but it's very helpful to have a teacher or to at least have a session with someone to just experience it. But I find that, you know, I prefer my clients to get to a place where they can clear on their own because it really is meant to be a practice that you take into your life, as I was saying, and can use in any given moment. And then you might, as you're working on your own clearing, you might get to places where something just won't budge. Something is just like you feel this bowling ball in your stomach that you just, whenever you have to get up on stage, you just can't move it. You know there's something there you need to look up, you can't figure it out. And then you might, you know, want to have another session with someone or a partner which gives you just a bigger container for that energy to really transform. But at its heart, it is something that anyone can do on their own. Using very basic techniques that are very simple to learn and I would say hard to master.
But mastery sort of can come over time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, just like any other practice with the showing up. And I would say this is also very good for people who might be, you know, might feel like, oh, I'm not the most visual person, or oh, I'm not the, like, you know, when it comes to like seeing energy or being able to, you know, visualize their inner landscape, or someone who feels that they're not good at meditating, because the techniques really engage the mind and give the mind something to focus on. Like when we do this work of sort of helping people to notice triggers, which I define as something that, well, you know, I think we define it as something that causes you to respond to it. And once you start figuring out what's most intense in that moment that caused you to amp up or shut down, and then you start finding that hook in your inner landscape that caused you to amp up or shut down from your past, then your mind kind of uses that like as kind of like the sock you give a bloodhound to track these energies as you're going through. So whereas meditation is really important and wonderful, I find people who don't like meditation or sometimes are bored by meditation or find it very hard really embrace this technique because it gives them a way to sit with themselves and really care for themselves but in a very engaging, interesting way. It's like most sessions end up feeling like kind of adventures. You're like, wow, I didn't know there was so much inside there that wanted my attention, that had so much to tell me.
I think that's such a powerful way of putting it. I didn't know there was so much inside me that wanted my attention. I think in my own experience of working with emotional clearing, I think that's exactly what my first impression was, and is usually the first impression that when I do emotional clearing sessions with people that they have as well, this sense of tremendous adventure is taking place inside me. There's so much to me and to my own process. And almost, I remember when you began teaching me this process a few years ago, I almost felt cheated because this process that we're calling emotional clearing and that we've said is body-based and is using this sort of felt sense cue in our bodies as the doorway is so simple. It's so simple and so simply intuitive. In fact, it completely rearranged what I understood to be intuition because it was so simple and just required that I follow along, that there was an element of feeling cheated by my culture to, it was like, it's right here. All of me, you know, there are pathways inside me that are right here waiting to be explored and discovered and leading me right to, you know, early childhood pains, early life pains that just wanted my attention. And that when I gave it those, you know, that attention, all of a sudden that weight lifted off of my shoulders. I remember that when you taught me this process, it was completely revolutionary for me, and also made me, obviously, when we learn something that really works for us, we can. There's an element of zealotry that's always possible. But I really felt that because I was thinking to myself, I think that there's something wrong. I think my culture isn't teaching me never taught me how to be with my emotions. As you said before, you know, our culture is sort of teaching us to emotions are an object. You put them aside, you know, don't cry or don't worry or don't grieve. Just, you know, these things are getting in the way of productivity. These things are getting in the way of some comfortable emotion that I can quickly conjure up rather than what does it mean to really, if I were to sit with this discomfort for just a little while and maybe being with it, it will just transform. And maybe if I listen to what this discomfort has to say, it will lead me to something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, one thing I think it's also important to talk about is just you see so much discourse, especially right now, it feels like it's coming to a head of people, you know, using trigger warnings before they post anything, or, you know, arguing at each other, saying that people have triggered them and they need to stop their behavior because it's triggering. And I think that emotional clearing has a lot to offer there because I see so many people that are writing articles about this and completely, in a sense, shaming people who are using this type of wording. And in one sense, I understand where those people are coming from, the people that feel this is a bad behavior because for our culture, because triggers and you know, being triggered in a conversation with someone by something you don't like is, or something that hurts you, you know, from your past, is very different than actual PTSD that someone has. And I think in this discourse, there gets a lot of obfuscation of, like, the difference between PTSD and just being triggered in a conversation by something that was, you know, maybe traumatic from your past somewhat, but was different than, you know, PTSD, which can be triggered at any given moment, no matter what someone is saying or doing. And I feel like, but on the other hand, I feel like people ignore that the reason this is becoming so prevalent in our culture right now is because people are in so much pain and they don't have a lot of tools to work with that pain, to work with those emotions. So every little trigger becomes this, you know, volcano of suffering, this you know, pull the, break the glass, take out the axe, you know, knock down the door and jump out the building. Like every single little trigger becomes that. And I feel like what emotional clearing teaches us how to do is how to work with the kind of pain that comes up in those types of situations, so we don't feel so powerless and we don't feel so overwhelmed. We don't feel like we have to dominate others and how others are speaking to care for ourselves. But I do think a lot of those people, I mean, it's easy to dismiss people that are saying they're being triggered, but I think we have to think, like, okay, what if we take them at face value? What if they are in so much pain that they need someone to stop talking about something? What if we could give those people tools to, instead of controlling others' behavior, to really pull back that projection and clear in themselves where that trigger first occurred? So that's something that really interests me right now.
What if we could be in the discomfort and be with where that trigger occurred? We're going to be talking more with special guest Langston Khan, spirit worker, emotional clearing specialist, and who you can find out more about at shamanbomb.com right after this break. Langston, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful day today. Woke up this morning with sunshine on my face. And since the storm clouds have lifted, I keep drifting back to you. Yeah, you, and you alone have the power to redeem me. I was lost, and I'm still lost, but I can't deny the feeling. It'll be okay, my friend, my brother, till the end. It'll be okay. It's a beautiful day today. You always say you shouldn't be here. Your brush with death was far too near. Never pinned you to the ground. You cheated death, broke every bone. Now your body's on the mend, and I can't wait to see you again.
Inspirational and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running Conjure show on the planet and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner. Starring Candelo Cambisa and Malik Cambisa, this is the voice of authentic Cuban polo and Dominican sanse in the United States, with special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front-page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burma Shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company is based in sunny Forestville, California, and provides traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at luckymojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual. We are back at On Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and today we have special guest, Langston Khan of ShamanBomb.com, and he is with us today talking about the practice of emotional clearing and his upcoming webinar, Healing Our Triggers, which you can find out more about at shaman/events/emotional/clearing/tele/class. Langston, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here once again. So we've been talking about this idea of the felt sense being a body-based experience that's tied to our emotions. And you even mentioned how sometimes we might not remember our dreams, but there's a felt sense we have in regards to our dreams. We might not remember the specifics of them, the specific imagery, exactly what happened, but there's this sort of pulling, there's this energy in our bodies where we all of a sudden just know something. And it's that place, that felt sense, that's grounding this conversation of emotional clearing. And before we went to break, we were talking a bit about this idea of triggers. Definitely anyone who's on Facebook, I probably mentioned Facebook every single episode. That's just a testament to how much I'm on it. But anyone who's on Facebook is definitely catching a whiff of a conversation that's happening in our universities, in our public spheres about triggers. What's the point at which we need to sort of pull back conversation because someone is being triggered? And really, are there any other sort of alternatives to that? I think that this process that we're talking about, emotional clearing, is kind of revolutionary because I don't think people necessarily realize that there is a root to trauma. I think that we live in a culture, I mean, I remember even as a teenager going to the counselor's office in high school, often being told, well, you need tools to cope. This idea of coping, this idea of tolerating, of dealing with excruciating pain, as you said before, you know, there are people who are in so much pain, but you're sort of saying that there's an alternative, that there's actually a route where we don't have to cope. We can actually resolve these energies at their root. Am I correct?
Yes, yes. And I think I'm going to jump over a little bit. Like, one of the main energies that we often see coming up with this type of work is sort of child parts, I might call them, like wounded child parts. And there's this sense where, you know, we live, and in essence, a lot of people in our culture are very much still children, because we don't in our culture have real culturally sanctioned processes for tending the gates of initiation into adulthood. So people are often walking around still with all of their baggage from childhood of all their hurts and grudges and pains and fears and areas where their heart's been closed off and they don't want to do something anymore. And whereas in an indigenous culture, you're not to over-idealize them, but you wouldn't see that, because adolescence in cultures with real initiation ceremonies ends up lasting, like, you know, only as long as the initiation ceremony itself. It could last like 2 weeks or 2 months. Then they're an adult, and they go back to their village, and they drop all of the baggage that they had from childhood, and they're able to move on with their lives and remember why they're here. And so I think this is a way we can do that in small parts, sort of showing up as the adult for our wounded children and giving them what they needed in that moment that they didn't get. And then through that, bringing back that power fully into our life. Because a lot of these stuck places come from times in our lives when we make decisions that we think we have to make to survive. Like there's like an adult or an authority figure or even our whole town is telling us, if you do not do this, you will die. Because for a child, to die is to be abandoned, to not be loved, to be isolated. All of those things mean death for a child. So there's decisions we might make thinking that they're life or death decisions, when in actuality, you know, as an adult, they're no longer life or death decisions, but we're still making those same choices within us because there's this part of us that felt it had to make that choice to survive. And this can sound very abstract, but one example I just have from my life, a clearing that I did about a year ago that was really powerful for me, or a little over a year now, but was I was having this experience where when I was in queer spaces, like a gay bar, I was feeling comfortable now, whereas in the past maybe I felt a little scared in some ways. And there was a moment where someone looked at me and, you know, like probably we were just going to talk or something, but they looked at me and I felt myself recoil, constrict, and draw back. So that right there was my big felt sense. And I was able to take that feeling later on in a clearing session of the recoiling and constricting and just be with that and feel it. And I realized it wasn't actually just a fear of being in a queer space. It was this fear of being desired, this fear of being seen. And as I got down to the root of it, I realized there was something in me that felt like if my desire would get me killed. And so as I found that word, you know, I took that into my belly, and using these emotional clearing tools, I just felt that there was like a huge boulder in my belly. And I was talking to the boulder, and the boulder was letting me know it knew that if I expressed my thoughts and feelings and desires and emotions, that I'd be killed. But when I really was able to hear that, and let it know I understood that, but I didn't need that protection anymore, the boulder crumbled, and inside there was a child part. And as I followed that child part back into a memory that was connected to it using these techniques, I found it to this, it came back to this memory when I was a kid of like in elementary school when boys used to play this thing called the fag test, where they'd put their arm on your shoulder, and then if you didn't brush it off immediately, you know, heaven forbid boys should ever touch each other. If you didn't brush it off immediately, then you were a faggot. And so I realized there was this part of me, this child part, that still was horrified at the idea of being thought of as being gay, even though consciously, you know, I've been out for years. I had no problem with myself or who I was and how I related to people. There was still this part of me that was terrified of male desire, or of being desired, and thought it would die if it was desired. And so I was able to show up using this clearing process for that part of me as an adult in that moment, to show up as the adult that wasn't there, as a teacher that never showed up for me when I was a kid, and really let myself know that it is okay to touch other, it is okay to be loved, it is okay to be held. There's nothing wrong with it. And I just started crying instantly as I felt this, I was very surprised actually, I felt this torrent of emotion pouring out of me that had been held in this little part that I didn't even consciously realize in my day-to-day existence was an issue. And after that, just my whole relationship with desire and flirting and romance just completely shifted in my life. And so that's just like a tiny little example of how you can use these techniques to really get to the root of things that you might not even consciously realize are a problem, that like one little moment in a bar where I recoil when someone looks at me is actually connected to this deep wound that's really asking me to look at it and be with it and transform it.
That's completely profound. And also profound is this sort of idea that in the West, for those of us who aren't experiencing effective rites of passage into adulthood, we may be becoming chronological adults, we might be aging, but we might still have all of these wounded child parts that have been sort of strewn throughout our lives that are desperately needing our attention and are still, even in our chronological, you know, adulthood, 20s, 30s, 40s, we're still making decisions based on the needs of those child parts, even though we are not children, and even though the risks aren't there anymore. I think one of the things you mentioned is how, you know, for a child, it really is a very serious thing to be abandoned. It really is a very serious thing to not be loved. If you're not loved, you don't eat. You know, if you're not, you know, for you in that moment, sort of this experience of as a child, I'm gay, I won't be loved, therefore I will be abandoned and will literally not eat or be taken care of, and how into adulthood some part of you was still reacting on that trigger. Some part of you was still on that brake pedal of stop, don't move forward, even though the consequences, you know, were absolutely not there anymore. So in a way you're saying, you know, this is something that this is an epidemic in the West.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I would say it's an epidemic. Absolutely. And it's just amazing what I've seen clients able to do when they come into presence with their body just in one session. Like there's this one woman who came to me, and we, you know, through various triggers that she brought, we just really followed them in her body. And at the end of the session, she came out deciding to get surgery for breast reduction that she had actually been putting off having, because she had this deep fear that she didn't realize it connected to her childhood or connected to anything, but she just knew she had this fear of the surgery. And that wasn't even what she had come to the session about, but that's what came up as part of the session. And after the session, she was able to, with a perfect ease of mind, get the surgery. She totally changed her life. Her back no longer was in pain all the time. And just out of one, like, you know, 45 minutes of being in presence with what was going on in her body, was able to make that drastic change in her life. So it's like, it's just fascinating to see, it's heartening, I think, to see how much we can do in a short time, even after years of neglecting our emotional life.
Ms. Michael in the chat room sort of brought up a possible example of what it might look like to show up as your adult self in that memory for the wounded child part, speaking back to the one that you were talking about, for the wounded child part that you discovered was sort of still existing in that moment of, you know, the fag test back at school. And she said, she put in quotes, "Oh, so maybe that you would tell that wounded child part, the men who want to touch you and get naked are good people who want you to be happy." What is that? What's that like to be in that moment of? I think this is a great question that she's bringing up, because it brings up the question of what does that mean? What does that look like to go into a memory where some wounded child part of you is still sort of stuck, is still staying there, and to enter that memory as the adult that wasn't there? What's that like, and what usually happens in that moment?
That's interesting. So, yeah, it definitely depends on the memory, and it's a lot about, it's not about intellectually deciding this is what this child needs in this moment. Like, of course, our minds play a part in it, but it's much more this intuitive and body sense of really asking that part of you, that little part of you that you feel inside of yourself, what do you need? What do you need that you didn't get in this moment? And so the first step I generally do is I go in and I just feel the emotions of my child self at that time. I don't try to intellectualize like how I think I felt at that time. I really just slip into the body of my child self and access its emotions. At that time, where I got clients that doing the same thing. And then after that, then after I've sort of experienced the story as a child, then I go in as an adult and let sort of rewind and let the story play out one more time and just see how it looks through my adult eyes. And then I call in something called my inner healer, which is something I help clients to develop a relationship with. I work with that energy and also with the child self to change the story that was needed. Maybe we need to, like, clear out all the kids that were in that classroom that weren't able to respect boundaries and, you know, be nice to each other. Maybe we have to, I have notes open from this actual session. So I remember that what I did in that moment, I really had to show him how I had to take him out of class first. I took him out of the classroom. And he started crying, and I started crying, and then I just was really letting him know that it was okay to express himself, it was okay to express physical affection, and I also gave him examples of my own life. I was like, look, I survived this. I'm here now as an adult, and look at the good boundaries I have in my life right now. Look at the protection available to me, the helping spirits I have to protect me in my life right now. And then we went back into the classroom. And the whole story changed. We told the other boy we didn't like what he was doing. All the tension in the classroom, the fear around touch and expression just dissolved. And everyone just started, it wasn't even about being naked. It was literally just about being able to express physical affection for one another, which is so sad. Like, it really has very little to do even with gay or straight. It's just like the ability of kids to be able to be physically affectionate with each other was so tamped down in that memory. That was what it looked like for me in that moment. But that's generally the arc of that type of work when we have to go back to a childhood memory. It's like that three things of like feeling what the child's feeling, looking at the story from the adult perspective, and then working as an adult to show up for that child in ways that the adults in their life at the time weren't showing up for them.
I remember that one of my earliest emotional clearing sessions was also really, really profound emotionally. I don't remember what it was that I don't remember that there was what the felt sense was that led me into it, but there definitely was something I was working through, something that I saw in my life, a similar recoiling from my own experience. Literally feeling the physical sensation of recoiling and thinking, wow, what's that about? What about me is being triggered right now? And I went into that recoiling in my body, and I listened to it, I spoke with it, and was led to this very early childhood scene in my own life of being in church. It's a memory that I had remembered intellectually for many, many years, but it wasn't something that I had ever been led to as the root of an issue in my life, where it had been in this moment. And the memory was being very, very young in a church that I would attend with extended family and sitting in the front row and wanting to sing. I wanted to sing a solo song
for this sort of small church that I was a part of. And I had told sort of the pastor's wife that I wanted to sing. And she said, oh, yeah, definitely. You know, you'll definitely get to sing this church service. And my whole life, I thought back to this memory, and I always thought, God, what a ham. You know, this need to sing in front of everyone. So weird. And I thought that was really just sort of the general consensus and why I didn't get to, you know, to sing in that service. And that really the answer was, you know, I needed to sort of check my narcissism, my being a ham, etc. So I really could have cut things off from there once I saw the memory, like, oh, I know what this is about, etc. But just as you're saying, these tools of being with what the child is saying in the moment, and also even being with what the adults, if there are any adults in the scene, what they were thinking. Not that, you know, they were right, but a whole different perspective on the situation really came out of that. Because when I sensed in that moment into what Child Kai was saying, was, oh, my God, I love leading people in worship. Oh, my God, I love being with people and raising ecstatic energy. Really this selfless desire to engage. And when I sensed into what the pastor's wife was sort of saying about me or thinking about me at the time, what she was saying, which is what I adopted and was stuck with 20 years later, was this child is too much. He's too much. He is energetically too big. He is so big that he might destroy the whole church. He is so big. He is too much. And that's what I was left with and what I had carried away. So when I entered that scene as an adult and took the mic, I remember literally asking Child Kai, what do you need right now to feel safe? And he said, I need the mic. And I went on stage and I gave him the mic, and the just how the story changed was that everyone in the church left the room and the church broke open, and like divine light came down from heaven. And it was one of the most profound experiences. And it was just saying, this is what you've been hiding. This is what you've been keeping under a rock, having been playing the same game that the fearful adult in that story was playing. You became that adult rather than becoming and really unleashing the energy of this selfless child who just wanted to engage. And that was really the big reveal to me, that we're also not just talking about how emotional clearing is about healing our triggers, but it's also about bringing gifts back, gifts that are sort of hidden in these wounded child parts, if we can bring them back.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think another... Yeah, the very important part, the point that you brought up, that we become the adults who were the ones who were sort of oppressing us, so to speak, as children. We become the adults who told us to ignore our instincts of what was right in that moment, because we keep playing out those same patterns. So we need to go back to show up as new adults and really bring back those gifts. And one of the things I just wanted to say about that, too, is, well, also, I didn't mention that I started with interrelationship focusing, which is where a lot of the body stuff comes from, of really learning skillfully to guide someone to interfacing with their body and coming into presence with it. But then a lot of the clearing of the child parts work comes from the clearing technique developed by Christina Pratt of the Last Mass Center for Shamanic Studies. And so I sort of combine those two techniques in this work. But just sort of thinking about the church thing, I think it's also interesting to look at how we need these tools to be able to be in community in a good way with each other. Like, it's so inevitably, especially in spiritual communities, people are going to trigger each other. People are going to annoy the hell out of each other. And if you don't have some sort of tool where you can pull that projection or that trigger back and really look at, like, why is this coming up? What is this related to from my past? Or is it not related to my past? It's perfectly a rational response, and this is great. If you don't have that tool, these things just fester and tear communities apart, I find. So I just think it's important to remember this isn't just about your personal healing process. This is also about community healing, about really being able to be completely honest with each other in community because you trust that you all have the capacity to heal yourself. You know you don't have to worry about hurting someone's feelings or, you know, tiptoeing around people because you all are strong enough to do this work for yourselves.
I think that's a profound idea that sort of attached to community, this idea that I trust everyone in this community, I trust their capacity to heal themselves. I think that everyone knows in community, we're definitely at the point where, in our understanding of community dynamics as a society, where we can say, oh, you know, you're projecting onto me or you're projecting onto this process, but then people might not know what to do when we're, like, you know, at an impasse or we're projecting or we're not stepping up to the plate. But you're saying that emotional clearing is a process that we can all as individuals engage in and also hold space for other people to engage in. You sort of mentioned the idea of sort of holding, creating a container for this, as we've mentioned throughout this episode, these big, beautiful, dynamic processes to occur. So that real transformation can take place and we can move forward from there, especially in these moments that seem so stuck and hopeless, you know, feeling ashamed, feeling afraid, feeling, you know, even holding oneself back from a necessary medical procedure, as you mentioned, took place with your own client. And there's this way of moving forward that our culture really isn't talking about or isn't even, you know, mentioning having the tools for. So you're teaching this five-week webinar coming up May 30th called Healing Your Triggers, Emotional Clearing. And it's can you tell us a bit about what people are going to be experiencing over this five-week emotional clearing webinar that starts next Saturday?
Yeah, it's coming right up. It's essentially will be the some lecture, but really it'll be a very participatory class. There'll be clearing with partners in the class. There'll be clearing with partners outside of the class once a week. And I'm just going to be taking people through all the techniques they need to use emotional clearing for themselves and also to guide partners in it as well so you can have a companion to clear with. And we kind of go from the most basic to, like, exploring what is healing even, like how do we develop a relationship with the energy of healing, what does it even mean, and then into, like, what is the felt sense, learning to listen to your body, interpret its language, and come into relationship with your body's processes. We learn linguistic tools to stay in presence, like how to talk about what's coming up emotionally in a way that brings you into more intimate relationship rather than exiles it or completely identifies you with it. Like, I'm so angry, I want to kill someone, or I'm never angry. Like, trying to find a middle ground between those two places where you're really in relationship with what's coming up. We also just go over how to identify triggers in your daily life and turn them over and really get at their essence and look at them in your body and clear them there. And just tools for supporting others in doing this work as well and just bringing this sort of level of presence into your daily life.
And for those of you who are listening, this, again, you can sign up for this class at shamanbomb.com/events/emotional-clearing-tele-class. It's a five-week emotional clearing webinar, Saturdays, May 30th through June 27th, from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you when you sign up, the special code on Sacred Ground will get you a discount into this class, which, again, is beginning next week. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Truly, it's
It will revolutionize your experience of yourself and the world around you and of community. But there's actually additional benefits that we haven't really discussed much during this class, which I will say right now include heightened psychic perception. This idea of working with the felt sense inside your body that leads you to wounded child parts. Earlier, Langston was talking about talking with a boulder inside himself and how it sort of crumbled. We're talking about intuitive skills that are at a level of self-trust that really revolutionize everything you know about intuitive perception. And I know that Langston does not want me to bring this up, but this wounded child part conversation really isn't just for humans. It extends to land spirits. It extends to spirits of the dead. I have used emotional clearing in helping spirits of the dead resolve their energies and aiding them to move on. And most recently, Langston has worked with this same process within the context of shamanic journeying, which we will be talking about in another episode, but to help a cat. Langston, can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Can you say the question one more time? I got a little lost in the chat room.
Oh, sure. I was just talking about how emotional clearing, this process that we've been talking about using for ourselves and working through our own processes, how you used some of similar techniques recently to help a friend's cat.
Ah, okay. Yes. To help what?
A friend's cat.
Ah, yes. Okay. So there is it was a very bizarre incident, actually. I got a call in the middle of the night at like 1 a.m., Kai was at our friend's house, and actually people I don't know, and she was having an emergency with her cat where it's having these urinary tract issues and it's going to have to go in for surgery the next morning. But just something in here felt like she really wanted another opinion about this cat. And so Kai told her that I offer shamanic journeying for people. So I just, you know, at 1 in the morning I got my rattle out and got my herbs out and got ready to journey. I went to this cat, and the cat actually needed to go through a sort of emotional clearing process. So I was kind of just guiding to the cat the fears that were coming up when those fears first happened. And it turned out that when the cat had first been born, it was taken at a little too early age from its mother. And there was a moment that it showed me these images. It experienced a total cold and like hard steel and isolation that just terrified it. And so it is a total feeling of total abandonment. And so I cleared with the cat and I extracted some energies in the journey, and then the cat said it was fine and it told me what it needed from its owners, and it walked off. And it turned out what the cat actually needed was that every time its owners were leaving the house without telling the cat where they were going or like how long they were going to be gone. And the owners had somewhat of a chaotic lives, which I didn't know except through the cat telling me that. It was bringing it back to that place of trauma and fear. And so this is actually the first time I'd ever done this type of healing work for a cat before, but I just decided to try it because it felt right, and it's what the cat was asking for in the journey space, and I trusted my spirit. I told the owners what happened. They said it made total sense. They brought the cat to the vet. The vet said they could go either way with the surgery. They decided not to do it, partly based on the journey, though obviously I'm not a medical doctor, not a vet, so I was very clear about that. What ended up happening is they did what I asked, and the cat stopped having any problems. It used to have to go to the vet once every week, and it hasn't been in a vet for the last month now, and it's been fine. So it's just interesting how these techniques do apply to more than just our own personal life. It's like when we really understand our own inner life and how to work with energies there, it definitely translates to helping us to be in better relationship with the sort of ecology of spirits all around us. Whether, like Kai said, that's working with land spirits or sensing into, you know, unresolved issues of the dead, or it, obviously those take some different skills and modalities in relationship with emotional clearing, but it does provide a great foundation for really any type of spirit work, I find.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think you mentioned as well that part of this process did involve leading this cat back to this sort of initial point of kitten trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and helping it to change the story there.
Much like
which
we were
I didn't know
could
be done, but.
For me, it's one of my favorite stories of spiritual healing and resolution because A, I love cats, and B, it just blows open everything we think about, you know, interspecies communication and well-being.
One thing that Nagashiva asked that I wanted to respond to was he was asking, so how do you know when a clearing is complete or when you've really cleared something? And this is a great question. There's a few different things. First of all, you do have this felt sense of it. Sometimes there's tears. Sometimes it's just this shift, like there was this pain somewhere in your body that now is no longer there. Sometimes this influx of energy you feel in your body to reintegrate a part of yourself that was sort of stuck. But then beyond that very subjective personal experience, if you're doing good clearing work, you should also be seeing your life shift around you. Because I think often we don't realize how much the people around us are playing into the stories that we're telling them to play into. So it's like when we really shift on a deep level our own stories, people start to respond to us differently. And that can be very dramatic as well. Like one time I was clearing with a friend who was really worried about making rent. And they were just feeling completely depressed, almost bordering on suicidal. And I was like, please, you know, let's just clear. Because what else can we do? Like, you know, we're not going to magically make money, so let's just clear. And at least you'll come into a better relationship with what's going on right now. And he's like, oh, whatever, you know, I know it's not about that. It's just money stuff. And he eventually decided to do it anyway because he was so much pain. And the instant we finished clearing around these deep issues around finances and money, he got a call from the person he was leasing the room from or renting the room from saying that he didn't owe as much as he thought he owed that month, which was actually incorrect. He did owe that money, but the person actually told him to pay less that month for no reason we can discern except that he cleared some deep thing around money. And it's like it sort of goes back to something we didn't talk about that much, that in this technique, one thing that I find and believe is that the root of our ability to manifest is really not in our mind, but in our body, in our heart. And so when we're holding these parts of ourselves that are making these fear-based decisions again and again, it's much harder to bring the full wholeness of ourselves to bear on our life and have the will to manifest. Not to go too far into like the secret thinking, like, you know, we create a reality exactly as it is. Obviously, we're all co-creating our reality together. So there's a lot of different factors. But it does make a big difference. And we change these stories in our body. Our lives do change in response to them. And that's how I would say is the best way you know that you've really cleared something. Everything shifts around you.
Absolutely. And that's actually also, you know, why I often am telling tell people the power of the energy of gratitude. Because gratitude is also a very physical experience that is rooted in our bodies. When we are trying to manifest something, when we're sort of saying an affirmation, it's very easy for us to stay in our heads. It's very easy for people to sort of do a spell or do some root work or do some magic around something. But once you express gratitude, there's this energy of bringing that into your body, what you're trying to manifest, what you're trying to make true, where you might not have done that otherwise. And on the other hand, so oftentimes, you know, if people really were to hear what their bodies are saying when they want to manifest something, they might realize some of the fears that are standing in the way. Everyone says, oh, I'd love to be a millionaire. And then someone says, here's $1 million. And then all of a sudden, oh, gosh, I felt this recoiling in my liver. And if I follow that recoiling, I'll realize that there's some part of me that's afraid of having abundance. There's some part of me that's afraid of having the thing I need, or afraid of how people will see me if I was that beautiful, if I was that strong, if I was that self-assured and confident. So for me, emotional clearing is definitely also this sort of inner form of magic, this inner form of magic making by clearing out the lies and the wounds and the triggers that are standing in the way of what we're trying to manifest, so that we can manifest those things so much more easily rather than having some unconscious part of ourselves standing in the way. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. So obviously you're doing this wonderful webinar that starts in a week. Are there any other resources that you would suggest to listeners who are thinking, you know what, I want to get into this emotional clearing thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, Christina Pratt also teaches emotional clearing classes, and she's an incredible teacher, so you might check her out at lastmathcenter.org. There's incredible resources available on inner relationship focusing, which is really like coming into relationship with your body, on focusing resources. Let me just double check that link. But I'm on doing that. Her book is called The Radical Acceptance of Everything. Oh, yes, it's focusingresources.com. It's a really great resource. It just has lots of free articles, free interviews with people, free videos that you can just learn a lot about focusing through. And you can also train in focusing specifically through that institute. There's also some incredible books, just sort of doing sort of contemporary research on, if you're more interested in the sort of data on and doctors talking about this phenomena of our bodies being so intrinsically related to our emotions and stress and our health. There's this great book, When the Body Says No, by Gabor Mate, who's a doctor, and he, looks into this a lot and from a more medical angle, but it's this very interesting research. There's also this book just called Focusing by Eugene Genlin. That's a great resource about how it talks about how he first developed the technique and why he developed it, and just gives the very basic guidelines of how to start bringing it more into your own life.
Well, thank you so much, Langston, for being a guest on this show and sharing your expertise with this modality that obviously I myself am a huge proponent of, and I will be joining you in these upcoming in this upcoming webinar, and I encourage those of you who are listening, go over to shamanbob.com, check it out. You will not be disappointed. The transformation possibility is exponential. Langston, thank you again so much for joining us, and I know that you'll be a guest again because you are such a multi-talented individual, and my fiancé, so it's very easy to get you back on.
You know where I live.
I know exactly where you live. This has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience, in which place plays a primary role. Until then, keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping a light in mine. And thank you once again, Langston, truly.
Thank you very much, Kai.
someone